Chapter 45. Suddenly Joshua was falling. He was rising up into the air, off the floor. The observation deck was still around him, its frame, the big windows, but the glistening display panels on the walls were fritzing out one by one. Through the windows he could see the bulk of the airship, its envelope damaged, torn silvery cloth fragments spilling away from the skeletal frame. Beyond that was only the sun, dazzling bright against blackness. The sun was just where it had been before, but it was all that was left of the outside world now, as if the rest, the blue sky, the green world, was a stage set that had been ripped away to reveal darkness. But now even the sun was drifting slowly to the right. Maybe the gondola was rolling. Lobsang was silent, his ambulant unit fixed to the deck. But still as a statue, apparently not functioning. The cat was in mid-air, paddling with her limbs, an expression of apparent fear on her small synthetic face. And there was a hand on Joshua's shoulder. Sally, floating in the air, her hair loose, rising around her head like a space station astronaut's. The deck creaked. Joshua thought he heard a hiss of escaping air. He couldn't seem to think. His chest ached when he tried to take a breath. Then the gravity came back, and blue sky unfolded. They all hit the floor, which was, for the moment, the wall. A kettle full of water spun its way across the deck, much to the apparent terror of Shimi the cat, who scrambled to her feet and fled into a compartment. All above and below and around them was a symphony of high technology parting company with itself. Joshua said, "We found the Joker of Jokers, didn't we?" And then his stomach convulsed and he threw up. He straightened, embarrassed. "I've never got nauseous after stepping before." "I don't think it was the stepping." Sally rubbed her own stomach. "It was the weightlessness, and then the sudden return of gravity. It was like falling."
"Yeah. It really happened, didn't it?"
"I think so," Sally said. "We found a gap. A gap in the long earth." The gondola slowly righted, but now the deck's lights went out, leaving only the daylight. Joshua could hear the sound of spinning metal things gradually ceasing to spin, worryingly. Lobsang suddenly came to life, his head, his face, though his body remained inanimate.
"Chakpa!"
Sally looked at Joshua.
"What did he say?"
"Tibetan swearing, I think. Or possibly Klingon."
Lobsang sounded oddly cheerful.
"Oh, boy, is my face red, so to speak. Well, to is human. Is anyone hurt?"
Sally said,
"What have you run us into, Lobsang?" "We have run into nothing, Sally. Pure nothing. Vacuum. I stepped back in a hurry, but it seems the Mark Twain has taken a beating. Some systems are inoperative. Fortunately, the gas sacks are intact, but some of my personal systems are compromised. I am checking, but it doesn't look good."
Sally was furious.
"How did you manage to hit a vacuum on Earth?"
Lobsang sighed.
"Sally, we stepped into a place where there is no Earth. A total vacuum. Interplanetary space. At some point in time, there was an Earth there, I suspect, but presumably some catastrophe destroyed it. An impact, probably. A big one. One that would make the dinosaur killer look like pea-shooter fire bouncing off an elephant. One that would dwarf even the big whack, the moon impact."
"Are you saying you anticipated this?"
"As a theoretical possibility."
"But you went plummeting into the dark anyhow. Are you crazy?"
Lobsang cleared his throat. He was getting better at that with practice, Joshua noticed absently.
"Yes, I anticipated it. I made a study of likely contingencies based on perturbations of Earth's history and took sensible precautions, which included the automatic step-back module that appears to have worked almost perfectly. Regrettably, however, leaving us with a sea of problems."
"Are we stuck here?"
"Stuck? In comparative safety, Sally. You are breathing perfectly good air. This world, though right next to the gap, is a perfectly healthy one, it seems. However, my ambulant unit is largely inoperable. I cannot access its auto-repair function. I assure you, all is not lost. Back in the Low Earths, the Corporation's airship development program has continued. The Mark Trine should be completed by now and would be able to reach us within a matter of days at full step.
More lights had come back on now. Joshua started tidying up the debris. From here, apart from the furnishings and some of the crockery, everything looked shipshape. But he worried very much about what damage had been done beyond Lobsang's blue doors. "Of course," he said, "the operators of the Trine, even assuming it's flightworthy, will not be aware of our predicament, will they, Lobsang?"
Relatively calmly, Sally said, "So, we are stuck here."
Lobsang asked silkily,
"Are you concerned, Sally? What about all those famous soft places? And what are you thinking, Joshua?"
Joshua hesitated. "The bigger picture hasn't changed, it seems to me. We must still investigate the migraine monster. You say that the gas bag is okay, yeah? Then can you step?"
"Yes, but I cannot steer, geographically, I mean, and power is limited. The solar cell surfaces appear to be intact, but much of the infrastructure... The problem, aside from rupture of gas sacs and pipelines, was the boiling away of lubricants."
Joshua nodded. "Fine. Then step forward. Let's go on."
"Across the gap?"
Sally asked. "Well, why not? We know the trolls and the elves have been fleeing through this area. Some at least must survive. They must be able to jump the gap in some way. You know, a two-step. Stepping takes no time at all." He grinned. "We will be back in atmosphere long before our eyes explode and dribble down our faces."
"That's a particularly graphic imagination you have there, mister."
But Lobsang smiled glassily.
"I'm glad to see you were paying attention during 2001, Joshua."
"We've come this far," Joshua said. "I vote we continue, even if that means we have to do it eventually on foot." He took Sally's hand. "Are you ready?"
"Are you kidding? Now?"
"Before we talk ourselves out of it. Double step us, please, Lobsang." Joshua was never able to make much sense of the memory of what came next. Did he really feel the stinging cold of space? Did he really hear the soughing of the wind of oblivion between the galaxies? Nothing seemed real. Not until he found himself gazing out at a clouded over sky and heard rain beating at the gondola windows. They gave themselves a day to recover, to patch up the airship as best they could. Then the Mark Twain stepped on, heading ever westward, cautiously now, one world at a time every few seconds, maybe half their old cruising speed, and only in daylight. After 20 or 30 worlds, they stopped seeing the crater features that littered the worlds around the gap, perhaps traces of chance near misses of the object that had caused the gap itself in nearby realities. They were somewhere beyond Earth 2 million by now. The worlds here were bland, uniform. In these deep footprints of America, this was still the Pacific coast, and they stuck mostly to the coastal strip, trying to avoid the perils of the deep forest, and indeed of the ocean itself. It seemed a dull band of worlds to Joshua, lacking colourful flowers and insects and birds, and with the vegetation dominated by huge, tree-like ferns. But at the sea's edge they sometimes glimpsed spectacular fishing creatures, agile bipedal runners with big sickle-shaped claws on their arms that they dipped into the water to scoop out big fish one after another, throwing them high up the beach. Days passed. The character of the worlds began to change further. The forest retreated from the sea, leaving wider coastal bands of scrub and scattered trees. The sea changed, too, becoming greener, Joshua thought. Stiller, as if the water itself had become glutinous, denser. They didn't speak much. None of the coffee percolators would work, despite their experimental smartness, causing Sally's mood to deteriorate quickly. And Joshua found it increasingly difficult to endure the stepping. Sally patted his arm.
Getting close to that teenage party, are we, Joshua? He always resented people seeing any weakness in him. Something like that. Don't you feel anything?
No. I wish I did. I told you I'm jealous, Joshua. You have some kind of real talent there.
That evening, as they relaxed as best they could while the ship stepped cautiously on, Lobsang startled Joshua by talking about access to space.
I've been thinking, what an opportunity the gap represents.
Since the galley was mostly inoperative, Joshua was hammering a grill out of a defunct piece of equipment. An opportunity for what?
Space travel. You could just put on a pressure suit and step off into space. None of that messy business of climbing out of Earth's gravity well on rockets. You'd presumably be in solar orbit, just as Earth is. Once you had some kind of infrastructure in place in the gap itself, you could simply sail off. It would be a great deal more energy efficient to get to Mars, say. You know, I was always a space buff, even back in Tibet. I personally have invested some money in the Kennedy Space Center, where they're not even taking care of the museum piece rockets anymore. Our pathetic handful of microgravity orbital factories gives the illusion that we are still a space-going species. But the dream has gone. Gone even before the long Earth was opened up. As far as we know, there is nowhere else in the universe where a human being can exist unprotected. And now, with millions of Earths available to us, who wants to go up into the cold, scorching emptiness in a spacesuit smelling faintly of urine? We could have been out there, applying to join the Galactic Federation, not slashing and burning our way across endless copies of the same old planet.
Sally said, "But you're leading the slashing and the burning," Lobsang.
"Well, I don't see why I can't have both. And don't you see? If we can develop the gap, maybe we can find a way to do all that after all. From the gap, the solar system is your oyster Kilpatrick. Don't forget this conversation, Joshua. When you get back to the datum, stake a claim to the Earths on either side of the gap before the rush starts and mankind finds that there is such a thing as a free launch. Think what might be out there. Not just the other worlds of our solar system, though surely a universe that has manufactured the long Earth has manufactured the long Mars as well. Think about that."
Joshua tried. It made his head spin. He concentrated on finishing his grill. The galley ovens were out, but he planned to barbecue most of what, had it been on Earth, might have been called a deer, the result of some brisk hunting by Sally. The ship stopped stepping without warning, and Joshua heard.
It wasn't a voice. Something wormed inside his brain, a sensation clear and sharp and offering no hint of anything other than its existence. Only that it was calling to him.
He managed to say, "Lobsang, can you hear anything? On the radio frequencies, I mean."
"Of course I can. Why do you think I halted the stepping? We're being pinged with coherent signals at a range of frequencies. It appears to be an attempt at the language of the trolls. I will concentrate on the decoding, if you will excuse me."
Sally looked from one to the other.
"What's happening? Am I the only one who isn't hearing anything? Is it coming from that thing underneath us?"
"What thing?" Joshua looked out of a galley window at the ocean below.
"That thing."
"Lobsang?" Joshua asked. "Is your port camera working?"